put it in a box. If there's a controversy brewing, we're in a lovely season of controversy brewing right now with the political arena, but or maybe one that's already brewed. There's usually a need for a containment expert. You ever see a containment expert in times where some news has gotten out or someone has done something to keep what shouldn't get out from getting out or what has already gotten out from getting worse? Put it into a container. That kind of containment necessity is, it's evident during, oh, celebrity times, you know, celebrities do something, or especially during this political campaign that's going on right now. And I think that we're going to see a whole lot of containment experts working over the next 18 months. Yesterday was a great example of a containment expert needed, although one of the candidates said something and then just kept up with it. Just didn't dial it back or get a containment expert. I'm sure that the need to contain things happens in other situations outside of politics and celebrity, but it's just not as visible as it is in those cases. So that's containment. Containment expert, put it in a box. There's also the not high profile, not at all controversial, and completely different idea about containment where we put things into containers to keep them fresh, like food, products, just about anything. There's nothing wrong with that. Put it in a box, you're moving. Put it in a box, it's got to stay in the refrigerator without leaking all over the place. And then, of course, there's another kind of containment or where that word comes into play, like, you can't contain me. You ever heard that? You can't stop me from doing what I'm doing. You can't contain someone's passion. You can't contain a movement whose time has come. You can't contain an idea at all. And something else you can't contain. You can't contain God. Question is, why do we try? Because we do try, even if we don't think that we're trying. This is God's house. No running in church. That's even a controversial one because some people hate it when I say stuff like that. But no running in church is a way of saying that God is contained in this building and we can't do anything that, well, just doesn't fit with our view of how that should be. We're trying to contain God. Or even more controversial, we've got the whole thing with clapping or not clapping, and when do we clap and when we don't clap, and if this person claps, it makes that person feel like it's not working right, and if this person doesn't clap, and there's all that containment and trying to contain God or to contain God to our own liking and decide what's appropriate, what's not, and God doesn't play that game. Or you have to wear a certain kind of clothes to be an usher. Am I stepping on enough toes today with this? Yeah. Jesus wore sandals after Labor Day, right? Don't swear in church. Anybody swear in church today? Probably. Under your breath, maybe. We can't contain God. It's as if somehow God's rules are only contained here in the building, too. Sometimes it's all right to do those things outside the building, but definitely not here. God is boxed up, and the only place where we need to enforce God's, but really our rules, is inside the walls of a church building. So when we say God lives here, it doesn't really work, because God lives everywhere. God doesn't fit in any kind of container. Be it a book, a whole church building, a political party, a box. God doesn't fit in your box. God doesn't fit in any box. And God is in places that we don't expect God to be. After all, if God is everywhere, then God must be in places that we would assume God never goes. No matter where. God got there before anyone else. So no one can control God. No one can hide from God. No one can go anywhere God is not. You can't bring God to anywhere God hasn't been or isn't. Then there's the other side, though. Sometimes we wonder, where are you, God? What in the world is going on? Like when tragedy strikes or people act with unspeakable violence. The shootings at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina. Historic black churches burning. The shootings at two military sites in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Or how about this? More than 12,000 shootings in Chicago since the beginning of 2010. More than 14,000 people hit in those shootings. More than 2,000 people who have died as the result of those shootings here. So much violence and so much hate. They make me wonder, where are you, God? What are you doing? Are you too busy? Are you on vacation? Are you sleeping? Why aren't you stopping this violence? I wish that I knew how it worked. I wish that I always knew the right words to say. And I wish that I could make everything all right, and I can't. We can hold our neighbor in prayer. We can seek God's comfort. We can be angry, and we can be hurt, and we can be confused, and we can hurl it all in God's direction. God holds us even as we hold one another. And I can't explain it any more than that. God doesn't fit easy explanations. God doesn't fit in any box. In today's Bible reading, we learn something about David. David of David and Goliath, of David and Bathsheba, King David. He thought that the ark of God needed a more permanent place to live. He lived in a palace and thought that it was simply wrong that the ark stayed in a tent instead. And the court prophet Nathan agreed with him. But God was not on the same page. God was fine with the tent and never asked to live in a palace or any kind of building. That would come later. For now, God told David that the house building was going to be in God's way. David's son Solomon, it's the one at the end of the verse that says, someone will come after your offspring. He did go on to build the temple. And as a matter of fact, in addition to the temple to the God of Abraham, he built temples to many, many, many gods. And the temple Solomon built would eventually become a problem for Israel. The temple became the center of the conspiracy with the kings and the nation's political and economic leaders. It became a center of wealth and power instead of a place to worship. And the prophets spoke out against how far the king and other leaders had strayed from God's plans. And that conspiracy would eventually lead to the destruction both of Israel in 722 BCE and of Judah in 586 BCE. Building the temple didn't turn out to be a good thing in the end. And guess what? The current day thoughts that you hear about and they're always present going through the political and religious circles, current day thoughts and efforts about rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem, they really don't have anything to do with honoring God. People say that, and I know that I'm making these words come out that way, but I'm, you know, expressing my opinion here, of course. I don't think that they have anything to do with honoring God. God can get anything done without any kind of box or temple or house. Building a better worship center, doesn't that really have anything to do with honoring God? Expanding a state by bulldozing homes as if it didn't matter at all has nothing to do with honoring God. God does not work that way at all. God doesn't fit into a box or a political party or a particular religious expression. Here's some Bible smarty pants information. A scholar suggests that the passage that I was reading today was written after the fall of Jerusalem in 547 BCE, after David's eternal house had, well, stopped. So everlasting or eternal here must have another meaning, or maybe it was just a mistake. And even if the passage was written before the fall of Jerusalem, we're reading it after David's everlasting house ended. And then we get into the lineage of Jesus coming down from David and the continuation of the everlasting house. And there's ways to explain it, but when you have to explain it so much, you wonder, what did it really all mean? David heard that his lineage would go on forever. The writers of the passage, after the fall of Jerusalem, were looking to communicate future hope to the people. And the writers of Matthew and Luke in the New Testament saw that hope as they reported the genealogy of Jesus, tracing him back to David and David's everlasting house. And David's house didn't really go on forever, but God's house does. So David says, I want to build you a house, God. And God says, you want to build me a house? I'll build you a house, and your house will last forever. What would it mean if instead of concentrating on what we can do for God because we feel obligated or because we think God deserves it, that we really would just experience God's continued presence in our lives? And what if we recognize that presence in all the people? And what if instead of expanding territory and conquering people and lands, we learn to share and attend to one another? And what if instead of making compartments for when we pay attention to God and when we don't, we just let go and encounter God everywhere? Not because we have to or because we're reminded by our teachers or our preachers, but because we just do. Because, folks, God's house isn't here, but it is here. It isn't out there, but it is out there. God doesn't fit in a box. God's house is everywhere. And we can, as God's people, as human beings, as people, we can continue to experience this unpredictable, this untamed, and this universe-filling God. We can continue to experience the loving, forgiving, life-restoring God. Because God's house is what we're living in all around, everywhere. God's house is what we're a part of all around, everywhere. God's house is open and welcoming to all around, everywhere. God's house is wherever. Amen.